I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Second hour of four getting started. Grant and Danny on the Fan. If you are just joining us, Danny's out today. He's got the strep throat. Feel bad for the guy. I guess better now before Christmas, right? Get it out of the way. Earlier today, we talked to Lamar Jackson and how amazing he was last night. And took some thoughts from you guys, Twitter, phones, on whether or not you're buying into the hype as the Ravens front runners for Super Bowl favorites right now. If you missed that conversation, you can rewind the show with the radio.com app. If you don't have radio.com, download the app. Go select our station. You can go back in time. It's DVR for the radio. This is a Football Friday. We're going to get back into things on the gridiron coming up next segment, and we'll talk to Les Carpenter of the Washington Post on the Redskins and the Eagles Sunday from FedEx Field. Carpenter joins us at 11:30. By the way, how bad is the turnout of Redskins fans going to be on Sunday? I'm pretty worried about this. I'll be at my normal tailgate before the game in D70, and then I'll go in and I'll sit in the warmth of the press box, so I know I'm lucky. I don't have to deal with the weather, but it is freezing cold. It's wintertime. The Eagles are going to invade FedEx. You got to deal with a bunch of clowns from Philadelphia as they're vying for division championship, despite the fact that they're not any good at all. And that's a bad football team that has no business making the playoffs. And yet, with a win over the Redskins, they'll be in the driver's seat to do so. Had they have lost to the Giants this past week, maybe that was a loss that would have resulted in fewer Eagles fans showing up, but now they're right where they need to be, having caught the Cowboys. Yeah, Sunday's going to be gross in Landover, Maryland. But we can get into that a little bit later on. The question right now is, how do you solve third base? I gave you my solutions. Number one, I would love to trade for Miguel Andujar from the Yankees. At number two, I would be a big fan of trying to deal for Hunter Dozier from the Kansas City Royals, no relation to Brian. Third thing I would do is try to kick the tires on a player like Tommy La Stella. Secondarily, maybe David Fletcher, an infielder from the Angels, with Rendon having been added over there. Maybe there's a little more wiggle room to move one of those guys. Look, Chris Bryant would be great. I just don't think it's realistic. I'm not sure you've got the system to make that trade. It won't cost as much only because he's got 2 years left, it looks like, ahead of free agency. A little bit of debate there among some contract dispute things that are going on, but basically, he's hitting the market. You get two more swings of the axe to try to chop the tree down. But you're not signing him either if you didn't sign Rendon. Let's go to Greg in Springfield on the Fan. Greg, how are you solving the hole left behind by Rendon?
Well, I would have thought this was never going to be an option until I read an article this morning online that somebody asked Colorado if they were opposed to trading Arenado, and they said no. I thought that was interesting. He's, to me, he's the gold standard. If there's anybody better than Rendon, it's him. So I looked at his contract. He gets paid like $33.5 million. He's got about 7 years left. He's got a full no-trade clause. But you got to ask, don't you? At least see what it would take.
So I'll put that in the same category as Bryant, and that category is this would be great for the Nationals. I would love this as a Nationals fan. And I don't think it's that realistic. In fact, that one way less realistic even than Bryant, who has 2 years left on his original deal for this reason. Arenado would be like inheriting the contract you just refused to sign Rendon to. So how do you tell Rendon, who runs your Nats Youth Academy and has been great in your community and has done a million things for you off the field and helped build baseball here in D.C. and helped win you your first World Series, that he's not worth it, and then turn around and essentially inherit that similar contract for Nolan Arenado? I think if you were willing to pay a third baseman that type of money, you'd offer that to Anthony Rendon, which they didn't do. Jimmy's in Vienna. Hey, Jimmy. Grant Paulson on Grant and Danny. How's it going?
Hey, Grant. Happy Friday.
Same to you, buddy.
Yeah, so I've got an outside the box. My main issue is replacing Rendon's production in the lineup. And so I'm looking at where do we get somebody who might be available to replace that. And I'm looking, he's got 1 year left on his deal. He's going to make $27.7 million next year. It's probably going to be the same AAV as Donaldson, except it's only 1 year and it's maybe a holdover. As you go out, trade for Mookie Betts in the outfield. And then I like your idea of LaStella, Fletcher. Go on the cheap, someone competent defensively at third base, but go get some offense. That's what I would do.
And your point is you're renting Mookie Betts. You're not paying him anyway. He leaves in free agency.
Right. I mean, maybe you love him. Maybe you want to make him an offer later. But go get him for the production until Keyboom is ready to slot on over, and you hope that's the future. But your window is now, so go get somebody big.
So here's what I love about this. First of all, I'm asking you guys what you would do, your answer. That's number one. Number two, you're creative. You're out of the box. That's what I'm begging for here. I want creativity. I want to try to find offense. It doesn't have to be third base for third base, obviously. Cool. Here's me pouring cold water on that idea, because it's like Arenado and it's like Bryant, something that would be amazing. The Nationals don't have the system to make that trade. If Mookie Betts is legitimately going to be dealt, I don't think he is, by the way, but if that was something that was actually going to happen, understand that there would be 29 teams in baseball in line, all putting together the best possible package to bring this guy in. He's probably the best player in the game other than Mike Trout. If not, you know, there's a short list. He's in competition with Ronald Acuna or a couple of other dudes year to year with some, you know, up and down performance. But he's in that discussion, in that Mount Rushmore team photo. The Nats system at this point, it's not barren. It's not bad. They've got too many smart people like Mark Shalaba putting that system together for it to ever be bad. But it is not high-end enough, and you lack the type of blue chip elite-level prospects to trade for Mookie Betts. Because if he's going to be dealt, anything you're going to offer the Red Sox, there's 10 or 12 teams that would do better. Bill's in Alexandria. Hey, Bill, Grant and Danny, how's it going?
Hey, Grant, how you doing? First of all, thank you for all you do. Thank you for all you do for D.C. sports.
Oh, I appreciate you. It's fun, man. I grew up loving D.C. sports. It beats working for a living.
Yeah, I'm originally from D.C., but what I would do, Grant, if I couldn't get Josh Donaldson or Arenado, you know, you want to keep the production without Rendon, and you can't get those two guys, well, I just go with all the other choices that you said. Thank you.
I appreciate you. See, but it sounds like you're in the Donaldson camp first. I'll be curious to see if the Nats could land Donaldson, what the reaction would be. He's a guy that Nats fans hated last year. I think he'd get over that really quick with his first big home run to win a game. But they'd go from losing the guy who was the best third baseman on the market to getting the second best third baseman on the market. You're not losing power. I think Donaldson probably will hit more home runs next year than Rendon. You're losing a lot of other things. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's Rendon. He's not. He's also older, and he's also been through now several organizations, starting in Oakland, went to Toronto, and it's kind of bounced around a little bit. Had to sign a one-year prove-it contract last year for a reason. I mean, there were questions about him after an unhealthy run leading up to 2018. So it wouldn't be a slam dunk, no-risk acquisition, but I think you're now at a place at third base where you're going to have to risk something. There's not a perfect option. There was one. He just left. His name's Anthony Rendon. Chris is in Hyattsville. Hey, Chris.
All right, great. I have a wacky, wacky idea. But the first part about this is, are the Nationals in win-now mode, or are they still building for like an evergreen team that's going to compete every year?
That's a great question. I can't answer it, but you know this. Rizzo always says, I got the 1 year, the 2 year, the 5 year plan. So I think they're always trying to win. He's trying to build a 90-win team every year, but he's trying to do it while making sure they're going to be good in 3 years.
And he's a genius at it. He's been really good at kind of having it both ways. But it's going to come to bite them soon because Scherzer's getting older, Strasburg's getting older. That dominant pitching window is closing. So if you can get Donaldson on a 2-year deal, even if you have to overpay him annually, I could live with it. But I'm not trading away the few prospects we have to get Bryant for 2 years of control because we know we can't re-sign guys, right? And I don't want to trade the prospects we have right now.
But let me ask you this, Chris, because you follow this stuff so closely. If I told you they could get the next 2 years of Bryant with this roster they have now, and they have to give up, say, Keboom or Garcia and an arm, and that means two more, you know this, legitimate World Series chances. You saw what that run was like and how fun that was.
Yeah.
You wouldn't
If you're guaranteeing me the division each year with a chance to go to the World Series, yes, I would take it. Because I also think Chris Bryant's future is a first baseman, and he kind of solves two problems for you in a way. You don't really have a legitimate first baseman right now or a full-time first baseman, and he can play third. But this is my wacky, all right? I would start seriously considering shopping Trey Turner because recent history indicates that we don't have the money or the will to sign these guys. I think he's sort of at the max of his value right now. I don't really see him progressing as a hitter very much because he just doesn't have the plate discipline of like a Rendon or a Soto. I think he's sort of maxing out into that 280-ish, maybe 20 home runs kind of guy. Plus, he's got a history of injuries. But I think you could get a massive haul of prospects for Turner right now because he's got 3 years of control, and he's a dynamic, exciting player. I think you could entirely replenish the system with that deal and not have to worry about what happens when he becomes a free agent.
So you could absolutely restock the system. You would get a boatload back. I mean, you would get more back in that deal than most teams have gotten in a trade in the last 10 years for anybody because shortstops are hard to find. He's one of the best at the position in the game, and he's in his prime, and he's controllable, as you said, for three more years, and that's why I wouldn't do it. Look, you said it was a wacky. You came in kind of knowing it was a crazy idea. Again, I'm rewarding creativity here. I'm not thinking about that for one split second. The only reason last year his numbers were similar to the year before is because he played 40 fewer games. If you look at his home run rate, it's spiking every single season. I mean, this is a guy that's got a chance to hit 25 home runs and steal 75 bags. You're more down on him than I am. He hit 300 last year for the first time. He hit 271 the year before that. I mean, he jumped almost 30 points and hit the same number of home runs as 1 year earlier in 150 or 175 fewer at-bats. I think there's been a lot of growth for him offensively. I really do. And I think he's great defensively. It was a good phone call. Appreciate the calls, their ideas. People are chiming in on this. Hot stove baseball in D.C. Who knew? We'll get a couple more of these next. 800-636-1067. Rendon's out. Who's your third baseman? What do you want to do at that position? If you're Mike Rizzo, you get to play GM. Plus, I do want to get into a couple of my burning NFL questions for Week 15. So we'll start doing that next. And if you're a big Skins fan, if you're an NFL fan, if you're not on this Football Friday, Les Carpenter gets you ready for the Redskins and the Eagles at 11:30 on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, welcome back. It's a Football Friday. We're presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. I will give you some final thoughts on the Nats' third base hunt post-Rendon and take final couple of calls before the end of this segment. Few NFL notes to get to, though, that I jotted down and wanted to hit before we got to Les Carpenter at 11:30. Number one, what Mike Tomlin is doing with the Steelers is astounding, and he should be your coach of the year in the National Football League. The lack of talent right now that team plays with week in and week out offensively, the amount of weapons they're missing, and they just keep winning, is absolutely incredible. Most notably at quarterback, where they went from Roethlisberger to their backup, Mason Rudolph, to now a guy that they refer to as Duck, as if he deserves some nickname. They're on their third quarterback. They don't have Juju Smith-Schuster ever. What got me thinking about this was, Juju Smith-Schuster is now unlikely to play against the Bills this weekend. If they win, they're in Pittsburgh. This is a Sunday night football game at 8:20 against Josh Allen in Buffalo. They're 9-5, and they're positioned beautifully to make the playoffs, and they've caught the Bills. I mean, not only are they probably making the playoffs, they're starting to catch the teams that over the last couple weeks have been flirting with a bye. They just keep winning. It's amazing what they have done. Juju hurt. James Conner hurt. The entire roster is completely overhauled since the beginning of the year. This is what happens when you've got a great culture and layered talent and a coach of your operation who has the respect and reverence of the room and a front office, frankly, that provides backups who are fits in what you do schematically so that when they eventually get plugged in, they can perform. The Packers are going to be offering free hot drinks during freezing games. I love this. How cold does it have to be in Green Bay when the locals in Wisconsin are worried about going to the game because of the weather? So via NFL.com, ahead of Sunday's Packers game against the Chicago Bears, that just sounds cold. December Bears Packers. You hear that and you think of seeing someone's breath while you're watching the game. The forecast is calling for a high of 19 degrees in Green Bay. This kickoff is at noon Central, 1 East. So to help thaw the chill out, the Packers have announced they're going to be giving out free hot chocolate and hot cider to fans during the game. A limit of 2 per customer, so use them wisely. But I love this. I don't think every team does this in cold weather. I'm not sure if they're going to be doing this at FedEx Field on Sunday, but they should be. If you're going out, it's chilly, it's December, you're bundled up, you're watching football, the least you can do is hook me with a little hot chocolate. I'm spending a lot of money. Give me a little hot cider. You know what's not great? The snacks I get on an airplane. But every time the woman or the man comes down the aisle with their little cart and they say, hey, would you like some crackers or some pretzels? I feel appreciated. I feel like, hey, that's very nice. They're giving me pretzels. Now, if I really think about it, they gouged me for $100 for my seat. They delayed me 2 times before I got on my flight. They've inconvenienced me all day long. But I forget all that in that moment because they're giving me that little damn bag of pretzels. So I'm there. I'm paying a lot of money. You didn't twist my arm. I wanted to be there. But just give me a little cider. Give me a little hot chocolate. If you're going to FedEx, hopefully you get that treatment as well. I'm not sure that you will, but I'll do some digging. I'll ask around on that. 19 degrees is also not as cold as it gets at Lambeau Field. But I like that they're doing this. Kudos to the Green Bay Packers. Last thing I saw I want to hit on really quickly was the quarterback index came out this week. They do this every week on NFL.com. There are actually 4 different guys who vote on this. It's a panel. And they kind of crunch all the numbers. It's based not only on analytics, but on the eyeballs. And they rank 32 quarterbacks in the NFL based on the season they're having. And they redo the rankings after every game. Lamar Jackson's going into week 15. So this was before 5 touchdowns last night, 86 rushing yards. Number 1 in the NFL. Russell Wilson, number 2. Deshaun Watson was 3. Pat Mahomes was 4. And Drew Brees was 5. Couple of notables here. Former Redskin Kirk Cousins up to number 6 in the NFL this week. Up 1 spot from number 7 ahead of Aaron Rodgers now on the season he's having. Ryan Tannehill, who's been incredible for the Titans, up to the 8th best season of any quarterback in the NFL this year, according to the numbers crunched for NFL.com. Dak Prescott fell 4 spots down to number 10. He was up into the top 6. And here in Washington, Dwayne Haskins, the starting quarterback of the Redskins, obviously played a game where he was hobbling around and limping. Gutting through his outing against the Packers, fell from the 30th to the 31st spot this week. So he is now directly behind Kyle Allen, 1 spot ahead of David Blau. They rank the 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Haskins right now is 31st. So a few NFL notes for you here on Grant and Danny. Let's go to Carlos in Alexandria, wants to talk about what to do at third base for Rendon. What do you got?
Hey, I think we should look at it in 3 positions, and I've got a solution that I wouldn't be surprised that our Rizzo went to. We should look at first, second, and third in a collective, and there are 2 really good first and second base prospects out there that I think we could pick up over like 3 years for $28 million or 3 for $30. And combined, they hit almost 50 home runs last year. One is C.J. Cron of the Twins, who was having a 40-100 year until he hurt his thumb. And the other one is Jonathan Scope, who also played for the Twins and got beat out by a young sensational rookie late in the year who hit like 335 or something. Combined, those 2 guys hit almost 50 home runs last year, drove in almost 150 runs, and probably if they'd have been healthy, would have been closer to 180 or 90.
So I'm way more interested. It's a great call, good names, good research, dug everything about it. Scope intrigues me a whole lot more than Cron, who's like first base only. They got Howie Kendrick, who's going to have to play a bunch of first as a right-handed bat already. I mean, he's not going to hold up all year at second. They also want to bring Ryan Zimmerman back. I think that's going to happen. So I don't think they're looking for a first baseman who's going to play a lot. They're looking for a part-timer, and I think Cron's the kind of guy that needs to play to perform. Scope is more intriguing. Longtime Oriole people in this area know him because he could play second and he could play third. Now, I like the idea of someone who can do a little bit of both. My big concern is, and what I really don't want to happen, I just don't want to get to a spot where it's opening day and Asdrubal Cabrera is your starting third baseman, and he's basically the guy until they figure something else out. I want to do better than that. Sign Asdrubal Cabrera. He should be the first guy off the bench at third. He should start some at second. He could play a little first. He could be your super utility option in the infield. I just don't want him penciled in to start 114 games at third base. That's not going to cut it. Southern Maryland's where we find Chris. How are you, buddy?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say Andujar, I think, is definitely the guy the Nationals need to go after. The Yankees didn't really want him back in 2018 to start. He just kind of worked his way to that rough. So I think you can go get him cheap with Ursula playing right now. And I think he's a guy, if he does flourish, you know, with the change of scenery, he'll definitely be able to sign him to a long-term contract.
You're Paul McCartney singing, and I'm in the front row clapping. Yeah, that's the guy. I think he's going to make all-star teams. I think if you brought him in, he'd be your second-best player within a couple of years to Soto. And speaking of Soto, one last point I need to make, you've got to bring in a bat that protects him. Now, if you just go with Asdrubal Cabrera, I worry about a regression for Soto because there's nobody to do what Rendon did. And maybe you're not going to have a Batman and Robin situation, fine, but you just can't have teams pitching around and not giving Soto anything to hit. It ruins what he's capable of, and it's going to water down his ability to produce as well. Alex and Wheaton, you get the last word on this. Go ahead.
Hey, man. My view is that while the world looks at us as the team that won the World Series, I think Rizzo still looks at us as the team that came in second in our division. And one virtue to getting Donaldson, it's like a Dan Uglas situation. Take him away from the Braves.
You there?
Do you hear me?
Yeah, you're saying take him away from the Braves.
Yeah.
I love it. Sorry, I thought you had a lot of steam there, and you just kind of hit the brakes. Well done. Good call. Good hustle. Yeah, if you sign Donaldson, the Braves pay the price for it and don't get him back. They want him back. It's a double whammy. We've talked about this with the Redskins before. Free agent signings where you're bringing in a starter from Philly, New York, or Dallas that hurt them are even better for you. Can't be why you bring him in, but it's a nice benefit for sure. Good phone call. Thank you. Les Carpenter of the Washington Post next. Let's get a preview of the Redskins and the Eagles. Who's going to be in? Who's going to be out? And could we see the return of Josh Norman to the field this weekend? It sounds like it might be happening. He's just been a healthy scratch. Could he play corner again? We'll ask Les next.
I think that's totally up to him. I think if he talks with them, I think he'll play till he's 40 years old. Who knows? As long as he keeps producing the way he's doing, I don't see why he can't continue to play. You know, I do say, though, that you have to be smart with a player at their age. And, you know, this was his down day. You know, we backed him down. He gets a rest day, you know, to keep him fresh so that he'll come back out tomorrow. He'll do some red zone work, and then he'll, you know, we're pretty much in a walkthrough phase on Saturday, and then he's usually ready by game time. So the way that we've sequenced out his plan or his preparation plan for the week has really been conducive for his performance.
Bill Callahan on the ageless wonder, Adrian Peterson. It's a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. Les Carpenter covers the Redskins for the Washington Post. He's on the Mattress Warehouse hotline. Les, Josh Norman does not play at all anymore. He was a healthy scratch, didn't even see the field on special teams last week in a game in which there was an injury. So Simeon Thomas, who I couldn't recognize in a lineup, despite being at every game and out at the park occasionally, played 39 snaps. He does not get on the field. There's another injury this week. Could we see the return of Josh Norman to the secondary for the Redskins?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're going to have to go through a lot of injuries before you see that. They might go through, you know, the reserve offensive lineman out there before they put Josh out at this point. It doesn't look like he's going to play much. But, you know, again, you're right. So there's injuries and he's going to have to play. But I think they really want to look at every other corner they have. I think they want to move on from him. And at this point, it's like they're pretty committed to not playing him.
But they don't deactivate him. It makes no sense to me. Supposedly it's for some bonus or something. That, to me, is a huge story that no one's talking about. Who cares about his bonus?
But I mean, again, he's you fought with another player over money, and you've seen how that's worked out. So, I don't know at this point. He still can bring something to practice. I mean, I think that everyone is just trying to make the best of the situation right now.
Yeah, the situation being, I guess, what? That they've decided he's not worth the money they're paying him anymore, so he's not playing at all, right? I mean, is that what we're saying? That they're moving on from him this offseason and they've got to get...
They have not said that. They talk about him being beaten up this year with some injuries. They talk about some plays that just didn't work out as well and some different things. But, anything that we'd be thinking along those lines that you're talking about, we're inferring. No one has actually publicly said that, at least to me. I think, like, you have to look to the future now. This is what you're doing. You're playing a quarterback for the future. You're playing other guys. You're playing receivers for the future. In a lot of ways, you got to look at a secondary for the future. And the one that they have been using now, the three guys that have basically been doing, the carrying the starting roles, have played actually pretty well. And I think they want to see how that works for the rest of the year. And, as long as those guys are healthy, I don't think you want to necessarily muddle that too much.
I'm team less. I get it. This is out of my playbook. I want to bench veterans and play kids, and that's what they should be doing. My point is teams don't do this with guys making $14 million and keep activating them. You just don't see this, and everyone's acting like it's so normal, and I've never seen it in my life, and I don't know why we're doing it.
I think at this point with this team this year, nothing is normal.
Right. That's true.
I think the normal is nothing is normal right now.
What are the Skins saying right now about Dwayne Haskins? How do they feel about his development? He is over a quarter of a season in as a starter at this point.
I think they're cautiously encouraged. What is interesting with him, even I think back to the Detroit game where, gosh, you missed those throws that were wide open in the end zone, and you're just kind of smacking your head as to what's going on here. But if you go back and look, well, at least he made the right reads. At least he called the right protections. At least he did the right, he found the right guy to throw the ball to. He just, he needed to calm down a little bit, and those throws will become more accurate. I think everything that they have seen with him has been a little step forward. There aren't a ton of steps backward. And at this point, I think with a quarterback with 14 college starts and he's a rookie and, you've thrown him into a pretty bad situation, That's not bad. That's actually a pretty good thing. Now, I don't know what that translates to next year when presumably you'll get a more solid line, a new coach, a whole lot of new things. Does that mean that suddenly he takes a huge step forward? I don't know. But at least he's not stepping backward, and I think that's what encourages him the most.
Wes Carpenter of the Washington Post on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. You did a great story going back now a little over a week ago on Trent Williams. You went out, you visited him. He talked Bruce Allen. He talked about his situation with the Redskins. What came out of that, and what did you take away from your time with Trent?
The thing that I probably took away the most was kind of the sadness, and I think even more of the hurt in him. I think he was definitely very wounded by the way this all played out. Now, again, he's the one who held out, but I think he was wounded by the way that the situation from the very beginning, from the I think in his mind, he's kind of given his body to this team over the years, and he's played through so many injuries, and the cancer scare with his head was just the last straw for him. And I think all of that upset him. And then to go further, everything that happened afterward, the fact that there wasn't a trade, the fact that there was kind of a lot of volleys back and forth, and it appears to be kind of a war right now between the two sides. I think he was kind of upset about that. And some of the things he said, which, came out kind of sharp, I think, had a lot to do with sort of that sort of feeling of hurt that he had, that feeling he was upset. And, it's still, I thought the feelings were very raw for him. I don't think he had gotten over anything at this point. And it was a little emotional in sort of the things that he was saying, because I think he's just upset by the situation that he's in.
Skins are 4.5-point dogs on Sunday at home to Philadelphia. How do you see this game playing out?
It'll be a slog like all the rest of these games so far. it's such a different Redskin team from the very start, and it's certainly a very, very different Eagles team from that first game. I see it playing out like a lot of these games have been lately, lower scoring. Redskins are going to have to try to get some kind of a decent start. Otherwise, I think they'll be playing from behind, and it'll just kind of be an ugly game where they're sort of scratching to get back up, and probably neither team will score much over 20 points, if that.
Les Carpenter, you can read his work in the Washington Post. And if you missed that Trent Williams story last week, you really got to go back and check it out. It was excellent. Thanks for the time, as always, buddy, and we'll see you at FedEx.
All right, see you on Sunday.
You got it. There's Les Carpenter on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Normally on Fridays, we went off the field. I actually want to stick with a double play because I got something non-sports I want to bounce off you guys next. You're listening to G&D on The Fan. Beltway Blitz at noon in the 12:18. Speaking of the Redskins and the Eagles, what are you pulling for on Sunday? Spoiling Philadelphia's chance to win the division and making Eagles fans sad? Or helping your draft positioning and trying to get to pick number two so you can get Chase Young, who might be one of the best defensive players to come out in the draft in years? We'll discuss that next hour. Week 15 in the NFL got started last night. The Ravens, clinical and brilliant in their dissection, a complete dismantling of the Jets. By the way, I can't figure the Jets out. I just don't know what they are. I mean, I know they're not that good. We can start there. But some weeks they look like they're fairly close, and they got some talent. They were up 31 on the Redskins and then won the next week by 31. You don't go plus 62 over a couple of weeks span on accident. You don't do that if you're horrendous. You don't have that club in the bag if you just stink. But then there are games like last night where they're a junior varsity team. And there have been plenty of those, by the way. They almost lost twice to the Dolphins this year. Twice. They did lose once. They almost lost the second time. Adam Gase, everyone keeps telling me, he's great at what he does. He is a brilliant mind. I've never studied him. I haven't watched enough of his teams to have a strong opinion on it. I'll take your word for it. I just know that the Dolphins thing didn't end very well, and this Jets start is not pretty. They have 5 wins going into week 15 after spending a ton of money this offseason. In lieu of winning off the field, which we normally do on Friday, I actually want to do a double play because I've got something non-sports that I've been contemplating that I want to bounce off you guys right now. Let's get to it. So I really want to see this movie, Richard Jewell, okay? There's a promo running right now on the station about it that, if you didn't want to see it, will make you want to see it anyway because it's perfectly done. The trailer for it is great. If you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, this is Clint Eastwood's new offering. Eastwood, who I think as a director is a 10. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best we got. He obviously is starring in the film as well. This is the story of Richard Jewell, who's an American security guard who saved thousands of lives from an exploding bomb at the 1996 Olympics, but in the aftermath is vilified by journalists and the press who report that he was a terrorist. And this is based on a true story, obviously, or parts of it loosely, I'm sure, parts of it directly nonfiction. You know how these movies go. But the cast is going to be great. It's Sam Rockwell, who I am a proponent of seeing just about everything he's in. Clint Eastwood has a part in this movie, and as I said, is directing it. Say no more. John Hamm is in this film, was one of my favorite actors. Olivia Wilde, who's awesome in everything, is in this movie. So I'm going to go see it. I'm excited about it. The reason I bring this up is not just to say that this movie looks good, but this is a debate I've had for a long, long time with people. When a movie like this comes out, and it's about something that you know took place, and you faintly remember, you have a working understanding of this real-life occurrence that happened, but you're not an expert on it by any means, you don't really know the details of the story, I always have this internal struggle with, do I do a bunch of research on the story before I go to the movie and go in with knowledge and an understanding of the plot and where this thing's going to take me and what actually happened to have a juxtaposition with what they do in the movie? Or do I go see the movie as blind as possible with blinders on, not knowing exactly what happened, for the added entertainment of the swerves, what have you, and then go back and dig up the story. Now, before you say, how do you not remember that 1996? Blah, 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 well, I was 8 years old. Okay, I was probably 7, actually, when it actually happened, born in the late 80s. But I remember the 96 Olympics. I remember more than anything else Michael Johnson's gold shoes as he was sprinting. And I remember the bombing scare. I remember all that stuff. I didn't know a lot about Richard Jewell at all. I know a little bit of his role in the whole deal. But this is not necessarily just about this movie. It's more of a broad question. What I tend to do is read a bunch before I go to these movies so I am more plugged in and understanding of what is going on. But a lot of my friends, when I ask them this question, always say, go in blind, enjoy the movie, and then come back and do all your research after. So, Dar, I ask you first, and I'll read some tweets because I put this out. What do you think is the preferred better way to do this?
Given that you were 8 when this happened, I would just go in blind. Like,
just
it's
completely.
Not like you need a refresher. You just don't know. And
right.
Neither do I. Like, when I go see this movie, I'm not going to do any research going into it.
Doesn't
it
look good, by the way?
Yeah. It's one of those things where now I realize where Danny's coming from when he says that he just can't go see movies because
right,
he has kids.
Well, neither of us are probably ever going to see it. We're going to see it.
That's kind of the downside to it is like, yeah, I really want to see it.
So everyone on Twitter, for the record, is telling me to go in blind like you are. Evan says, watch the movie first, read up on the event. You can then decide if the movie is biased. I don't care if the movie's biased. Like, my point is not that I want to know what's real to life, what isn't. I don't care about the fiction, not fiction element, or what was true or what isn't. It's as simple as, do you enjoy something more kind of knowing the story, or will you enjoy it more not knowing what's coming? I happen to really appreciate movies like this. Like, a good example was the Tonya Harding film. I can't remember the name of it, but it came out a couple years ago. It was in the running for a couple of Academy Awards. And I remember watching that movie, and I liked it more because I remembered. I'd seen all the documentaries. I've been obsessed with that story for a while randomly, and I'd seen everything there was to see on it. Because I remember in my childhood seeing Nancy Kerrigan sitting there bawling and my parents thinking it was the craziest thing ever. One of the crazy things watching that movie that I loved and appreciated was how real to life some of those scenes were, like how these people looked just like the people they were playing and how they shot this in a way where the press conference was exactly like the real press conference. When you see Argo or some of these movies and they show pictures after the fact of like what the actual costume that someone wore was, and you're like, oh my God, that was done beautifully. That's so cool that they had that to a T with even his hair parted just the right way. It makes me appreciate the movie more. Chris is in Damascus on Grant and Danny. What's up, Chris?
Hey, yeah, the Pearl Harbor with Ben Affleck. That
yeah, I remember. It was like a love story, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, do you remember that movie?
Yeah, I do.
They made it almost into a romance movie with the newer one, with Ben Affleck, I think.
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, that I was so excited. Like, oh, wow. It wasn't like the one with Tom Hanks, D-Day, and all that.
Saving Private Ryan. I don't know if you're getting what I'm talking about right here, but I thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Josh in D.C. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, Grant? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
I appreciate you, buddy.
So, hey, with me, my preferred method is I typically watch the movie first, and then I look it up afterwards.
Okay.
The other caller made a reference to the Pearl Harbor movie. I got another Ben Affleck movie, Argo. Came out a couple years ago.
Love it.
It was about the hostage situation in Iran.
Yep.
I thought it was a great movie, but I definitely saw it first and looked it up afterwards. I just didn't want my, judgment or, perspective.
But you're like me. Are you like Googling that as you're walking out of the theater and just reading everything you can all night at that point?
Exactly.
Yeah,
either that night or the next day.
So here's why that one's a little bit different for me. That was a classified thing that I'm sure a lot of people are plugged in on that are more history buffs or just more plugged in on things. I had no idea about that story at all. So that's easy to go in blind. I'm talking about if you've got a loose working knowledge. Like Argo as a film, the first thing I'd ever heard about that entire operation was when I sat down in the theater. I didn't know what the movie was about other than the trailers. Then that night I go back and I'm basically doing a book report. Loved everything about it. But I'm I hate to bring up tragic, but like September 11th, if there's a film that comes out now with a great cast or whatever on September 11th, everyone knows the details of that. But if it's about a certain caveat, like this building and this response from this fire department, Do I look up and try to figure that out first just to have an appreciation for how they tell the story? Dan in Gaithersburg, what's up?
Hey, man, what's going on?
What's good?
So, actually, I was at the Olympic Park bombing when it happened.
Oh, no way.
How old were you? It was a very crazy. I was 19.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was kind of a crazy night. But in regards to the film, you know, I want to go in not having my memories, but not Googling anything. Then afterwards, you know, letting it hit me. And then afterwards, you Google everything and kind of have it all come back to you afterwards. Because, you know, that is kind of more gripping.
So you were there that night?
Yeah, I actually was at the Swatch Tower most of that night, and I stood within 10 feet of the garbage can that blew up.
Oh, my goodness. Where was it exactly?
It was kind of in the middle of Centennial Park. If you go there now, you won't. It looks completely different than it did then.
Okay. But it wasn't like it wasn't at an event. It was like an area where people were walking around and hanging out, right?
Yeah, it was the Centennial Park. So it was just a bunch of concerts going on.
Got you.
A bunch of vendors, and it was next to the Swatch Tower. Those old watches people used to wear.
Wow. Thanks for the call, man. The movie looks great. Again, just say Eastwood directed it and I'm there. Although we've been talking about Argo, and I think Ben Affleck might be the most underrated director. The Town is just such a great movie. Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Beltway Blitz is next. A solo expedition today. We're halfway home. We'll get into the Redskins and the Eagles. Would you rather them spoil Philly's chances to win the division or help their draft stock this weekend? I got my top five NFL games to rank. Ross Tucker's going to join us. It's going to be a fun second half of the show starting next on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.